Well, this summer we have been exploring the themes of church and community in the letters of 1st and 2nd Corinthians. And the section of 2nd Corinthians that we come to today, 2nd Corinthians 10 through 13, really represents a low point in Paul's relationship with the Corinthian church. In these chapters, we encounter Paul at his most incisive, even sometimes sarcastic, as he attempts to beat back a threat, not just to his own reputation with the church, but to the very heart and soul of the congregation. In fact, the tone changes so dramatically at the beginning of 2 Corinthians chapter 10. It's led many to believe that these final chapters represent a separate letter sent after conditions in the church had deteriorated to a critical point. In any case, this is where Paul begins to take on his opponents head-on. Opponents whom he ironically names super apostles. Though they remain anonymous, they appear to have been incredibly accomplished and gifted church leaders who seem to have come in from outside the congregation, bearing letters of recommendation, touting their Jewishness. But in a bid for power and authority in the Corinthian congregation, they came openly denigrating Paul and his ministry. But more threatening than the attack on Paul himself was their self-promoting and authoritarian style of leadership, which Paul explains is toxic to the church and antithetical to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Sharon read for us from chapter 11 this morning, but if you're following along, I'm going to be working from chapter 10 as well. And I want to start there with what Paul's opponents were saying about him while he was away from Corinth. First of all, they criticized Paul on the basis of his public presence and performance as a speaker. They called him timid and unimpressive, not nearly as bold or as confident as he appears in his letters. In a world where rhetorical skill was highly prized, especially among anyone claiming to be a teacher of wisdom or philosophy, Paul came across as an amateur with an inconsistent delivery. Paul admits more than once to some obvious weaknesses in this area. His opponents apparently had at least something of a point if those were the standards by which Paul was going to be judged. Second, perhaps surprisingly to us, Paul was under fire for his refusal to accept financial support from the Corinthians. He writes in chapter 11, "Was it a sin for me to lower myself in order to elevate you by preaching the gospel of God to you free of charge? I robbed other churches by receiving support from them so as to serve you. And when I was with you and needed something, I was not a burden to anyone. For the brothers who came from Macedonia supplied what I needed." 5 times in these chapters, Paul reiterates that he did not want to be a burden to them. Twice he says that he took care not to exploit them. Makes you wonder whether these so-called super apostles were eager to take the Corinthians' money. Instead, as the book of Acts tells us, Paul first supported himself by practicing his trade as a tent maker, and later he received gifts from the churches in Macedonia, from Philippi and Thessalonica, that enabled him to minister full time. This, however, did not sit well with the Corinthians. For many, it was yet another sign that Paul was not worth his salt as a teacher or preacher. By refusing to accept payment for his instruction, as traveling teachers and philosophers were expected to do, it called his credentials into question. Worse still, the fact that he supported himself as a manual laborer seemed to strike many of the Corinthians, particularly the more well-to-do among them, as beneath the status of a true apostle. As Judith Deal puts it, a tent maker was not a good thing for Paul to put on his resume. More importantly, since Paul didn't want to be indebted to anyone in Corinth who might be seeking status or influence through their giving, this kind of patronage in the ancient world often came with a lot of strings attached, and Paul didn't want to become entangled in such a web of power and status and control. Corinthians, however, misconstrued this reticence to accept patronage as a lack of love and friendship. And so Paul found himself under attack, personally and professionally. The very validity of his ministry and apostleship was being called into question. And Paul responds by drawing out the contrast between himself and these super apostles who've taken up the leadership in the Corinthian church. He writes that they are judging by appearances and by the standards of this world. The Corinthians seem captivated by their gifts and abilities, by their experiences and accomplishments. But for Paul, all their boasting and one-upsmanship is all petty and antithetical to the gospel. In chapter 10, verse 12, he writes that when they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they're not wise. For it's not those who commend themselves who are approved, but those whom the Lord commends. Paul finally characterizes the work of these opponents as being a fundamentally different Jesus, a different gospel, a different spirit. It's not their teaching or theology that Paul takes issue with, though, except as it's expressed in their practice of leadership and ministry. To the extent that they're pursuing their own status and power and advancement through the church, comparing themselves with one another, commending themselves to one another, these super apostles are actually, Paul says, false apostles, deceitful workers, masquerading as apostles. And with the most serious language possible, he condemns their abuse of pastoral authority. Through their words and their actions, Paul says, these church leaders are in reality servants of Satan, leading their congregation astray. Again, not through faulty theology so much as their self-promoting and self-aggrandizing style of leadership and the distorted values they were passing along to the Corinthian congregation. It's been traditional to see this section of the letter as Paul's defense of himself and his own ministry. But in actuality, Paul's concern throughout is not with his own reputation, but it is with the well-being of the church. In stark contrast to his adversaries, who are only using the church to advance themselves. The leadership of these super apostles proved to be toxic to the church community and a fundamental distortion of the gospel. The very human standards of leadership to which they appealed, a strong public presence, an air of confidence and authority, a culture of self-promotion, Paul rejected these outright. But even more so, their leadership was arrogant and manipulative, abusive. The catalog in chapter 11, verse 20 is especially damning. Paul calls the Corinthians to take account of what they've been tolerating. He says, you even put up with any who enslave you or exploit you or take advantage of you or push themselves forward or smack you in the face. And then with deepest irony, Paul says, to my shame, I admit we were too weak. According to John Garland's study of these chapters, the ministry of the super apostles was characterized by boastfulness, arrogance, self-aggrandizement, by claiming spiritual authority over others, berating humble servants of God, judging others according to human standards, taking pride in spiritual experiences and rhetorical showmanship and their racial heritage, A failure to appreciate Jesus' suffering and humiliation and servanthood and serving themselves rather than others. They promised comfort instead of the cross and selfishness instead of sacrifice. Paul's practice of spiritual leadership in the Corinthian church could not have been more different. It's no accident that he begins this section with an appeal to the humility, or meekness, and gentleness of Christ. Meekness and gentleness are hardly considered virtues in our society today, and even less so in the first century Roman world. They may have even been pejorative terms thrown at Paul by his opponents: abject, servile, timid. But Paul roots his humble bearing and approach to ministry in Christ's own meekness and gentleness. Whereas his opponents were judging by worldly standards of success and achievement, Paul will accept no standard but Christ. True spiritual leadership is defined by Jesus Christ, the Son of Man, who came not to be served, but to serve, and summoned his followers likewise to become servants of all. We call this pattern of life and ministry servant leadership. And though it seems to have been completely foreign to Paul's opponents, in Paul's ministry it was manifested in engaging in manual labor so he could present the gospel free of charge, by not comparing and evaluating himself with others or boasting beyond appropriate limits, by building up the congregation rather than building up himself at the congregation's expense, and, as we'll see next week, by leaning into suffering and weakness as an opportunity to depend on God and not on human strength. That would be one thing if the toxic leadership of the super apostles was just a historical curiosity confined to ancient Corinth. But we've seen it resurface in recent years in churches both large and small. As churches in our society over these last couple of generations have increasingly adopted a business or corporate model, and growth and success has been prioritized over discipleship and accountability, pastors have become less like pastors and more like CEOs. Congregations have become more and more like passive consumers. Scott McKnight and Laura Berenger write that in a society focused on achievement, accomplishment, not unlike ancient Corinth, the challenge we face in the church is to avoid being squeezed into that mold and shaped in that image. They continue saying, the church is not a business. It's not producing a product, and it doesn't gauge success based on measurables like influence or attendance or the bottom line, but on how well we conform to the image of Christ. Church leadership, unfortunately, has a way of attracting a lot of narcissists, modern-day super apostles for whom the church is a little more than an extension of their own ego. For them, church leadership might be about me and not the community. In a church with this kind of culture, competitiveness and power struggles abound. You encounter attitudes of superiority and a kind of rigid control exercised through fear and shame. If you've ever had this kind of toxic or damaging church experience, I am truly sorry. That is not what church is supposed to be. Church is not an organization or an institution of competition or advancement. But as McKnight and Berenger say, it's a local community of believers who are striving to be like Christ, both as individuals and as a congregation. Nor is church an event or the music or the pastor's sermon, but it's about joining a community of believers and being nurtured in the faith. It's about soul work and confession of sin. It's about relationships and community, which take time to build. It's about knowing and being known. loving and being loved, serving and being served. We, like the Corinthians, can sometimes fall into a distorted view of success and spiritual maturity. But as Paul tells us, it is not about influence or giftedness. It's not about numbers or who's got the biggest or the best or the most. That's always and only about conformity to Christ, who came in meekness and gentleness, not to be served, but to serve. May the God of peace work in us what is pleasing to Him, through Jesus Christ, to whom be glory forever.